Okay, here we are. Hi, everyone. Welcome to autumn. nice to be with you. And I just wanted to apologize if there was any confusion. I think Kay sorted out any confusion with last week about this being last week being integration week, and now we're in module 9. So hopefully that's nice and clear. We have updated the calendar, and we think that that is now sorted. So anyway, let's crack on with module 9. I'm really excited to share this with you. Mostly because I think this is the module where you start to see the kind of flip side of self-doubt, if you like. So even though module 9 is just one module, like 8, 9, and 10 are really where we are helping our clients to feel more resourced. So in the face of conflict, a more general approach to self-belief, which is what we're going to be talking about today, and then next week around goals, sorry, next module around goals. So we're going to spend 2 weeks talking about module 9. Now let me give you a couple of slides just to bring this to life a little bit. So I talk about this as like looking at this kind of expanded view of self-belief as being, as trying to think about this as the client's inner compass. So for those of you who have looked at the workbook and some of the videos, this may become real for you. We'll certainly talk about this more today. So we're going to talk about the aims of this module. We're going to look at the sort of inner compass model and how that works. We're going to talk about this as it's relevant for you today. And then next week, we'll talk more about how this is relevant for your clients. I wanted to give a kind of demonstration today of some of the approaches that we take. And that's because there are a number of different tools in this module. And I don't want you to feel overwhelmed. I want to try and sort of simplify this for you so you feel like you've got a nice juicy toolbox that you can dip into as and when you need it. Okay. So this is what we mean by the compass. So when I was developing this framework over time, I started to see that there were these common themes, common issues, common approaches that I was taking to support clients. And the more that I was researching, like the evidence behind a lot of coaching tools, you start to see that some of it's pretty bloody flimsy, right? It's more of a punt. And what I wanted to do was look at, what is it that the kind of researchers around self-doubt and most of the sort of psychology around self-belief talks about self-efficacy. Like that's the phrase that's used a lot in the research. So taking that kind of quite broad approach to self-efficacy, what does it mean to actually believe in yourself and support yourself to create the life you want, achieve your goals, do all the things that bring you happiness? And some of that sometimes involves, really calibrating your own values around what actual success and happiness means to you rather than sucking up what the culture offers us. Are there factors that show us what really works? Like, are there things that really help someone to do this? And a lot of the studies were that I was looking at we're showing how the relationship between the therapist and the client, the psychologist and the client, the coach and the client is actually the number one predictor of a person who comes to a helping profession type context and looks. It is the relationship between the practitioner and the client that has the greatest bearing on their success, which I think is fascinating. And it's because we are, as the practitioner, modeling for the client. worthiness, that actually filters into the client's relationship with themselves. Sorry, I think my...
You are just for a moment not to hear. I don't know what you are. Yeah.
Sorry.
Maybe you can say this again.
My connection just dipped a little bit. So the reason that I think that the relationship between the practitioner and the client is so important is because, and why it has such a huge, like beyond anything else, like there are no magic tools that will help a client, but the nature of the relationship between the client and the practitioner, we are modeling in the relationship with the client, the relationship that the client can then have with themselves. So when we believe in them, we trust them, we accept them unconditionally, we believe in their worthiness, we, you know, assume that their healthy adult self is in the room. Might be hiding under some blankets sometimes, but it's there. When we make those assumptions and meet the client in that place, they start to see, oh, this feels different. This feels different. This is a way of being with myself that I may never have had modeled to me, may never have, you know, had a really healthy attachment. So again, it comes back to us, right? It's kind of not about us and it is about us. And I wanted to kind of just start off, because there are a lot of tools in this module, and it is all about kind of bringing these four core kind of compass points of self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust into life for the client. I just really want you to hold true and dear to you. There are no magic tools, but the relationship that you have with the client, the way you show up and believe in them, will far and beyond anything you can imagine impact their relationship with themselves. And that takes a lot of courage from the client. I mean, I can't even think about it without choking up when I think about the courage that it takes to ask for help and go, this is not what I want. I don't know. And sometimes it's the only place that our clients have to be able to share, you know, what's not working in their businesses and their relationships and their friendships, the emotions that they're feeling that are totally off brand and uncomfortable. Like all of that, it just takes so much courage. So for us to meet that with, it makes sense to me. You make sense to me. I believe in our ability to figure this out together, and we're going to try some stuff. We're going to see what happens. That's the kind of, you know, approach that we're taking to all of this. Yeah. So I wanted to kind of bring this to life a bit for you. Yes, Jane, I love that. As humans and coaches, we're enough. Yeah, without the tools. It's really interesting. I'll send this out, I think, to you. If any of you have worked in corporate, you'll know that there are these things called business maturity models. You know, where a business has kind of heroes and no processes is kind of like at level one. And they usually, you know, consultants will come in and charge an astonishing amount of money to help you get to level five, where everyone's a hero and everything is predictable and controlled, right, in an organization. Yeah. But what is really interesting is there is a coaching maturity model that was put together by a researcher called David Clutterbuck, who has written dozens and dozens of books in the coaching realm. And he talks about how at some point as coaches, we get to a place where we don't really use tools. We don't really sort of, you know, do the whole let's do coaching thing, right? It's just kind of innate, and it's more of a conversation. And so, yeah, exactly what you're saying, Jane, without the tools, just a human connection with a person, where we're staying in our healthy selves, that's the key. And, you know, Clutterbuck, who I think is the only paper I've read on this topic of, you know, how do you know where you're at in your coaching approaches? He talks about this as getting to a place where you sort of think a bit more systemically. So yeah, I'll send that out, Hannah. So you've got a copy of it. It is under Commons license. So yeah, absolutely fine. I'll send that out after the call. Okay, so let's start bringing this to life a little bit for you. Here's what I think the compass is and where this has come about is as self-belief coaches, we unconditionally believe in the client's healthy self, right? It's like that's the part of them that brought them to coaching. So we believe that that part is always in the room. We also believe in the client's ability to cultivate self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust. Like we believe that they can access and grow and develop those qualities, those traits, those characteristics, those skills. The client may not see those qualities in themselves. In fact, I would say it is highly likely that clients are going to rock up and they're going to say, not something I associate myself with, right? Is a healthy amount of self-trust, for example. But it doesn't actually matter how well developed these qualities are in your client. The tools can support your clients to kind of start to think about these things and access them and play with them in their lives. And this was a really important part of developing this framework for me was, you know how there's a lot of marketing in the coaching world. I know I've certainly used this phrase before where it's like, you know, if you're ready to do the work, you know, anything that kind of expands on that. And I always found that was bloody pointless to say that to my clients because they had a shit ton of self-doubt and they were never ready to do the work. In fact, one of the, you know, kind of symptoms of self-doubt is the bystander protector will say, you're not ready. So that never kind of worked for my clients. And it also helped grow me as a coach because, you know, through being supervised, I realized that that was putting a condition on a client that they may never actually get to. They may never feel ready. They may never want to do the work. This is about looking at all the stuff that we don't want to look at, that we have a huge amount of resistance to. So for me, I don't require people to be ready or to want to do the work. In fact, I will make active kind of intentionally supposed to be humorous comments about it's all right if you don't like it. Like it's totally fine if you're like, oh, I don't want to have to do this. I wish I didn't have a tantrum. I'm here for it, right? It's like that kind of approach supports your client to be where they're at. So I don't want or need clients to be at a certain place where they're ready, but some will be. Some will be like, that has just got on my last nerve. I am so fed up of not doing what I want to do. I feel the surge of, you know, energy to take control of my life. And then that will be a sort of fleeting burst of interest. What I want to give you are resources and tools that mean your clients don't have to be anywhere. They don't have to be thinking, I'm super ready, let's go. You know, like that kind of coaching, I think, is kind of at odds with this approach, which is very much wherever you're at, it's fine, makes total sense. Okay. So wherever your clients are at, you can use these tools. This is where we want our clients to get to. We want them to feel reassured, right? They have self-doubt for a bloody good reason. It's never created in a vacuum. It's always related to some kind of past experience and the meaning-making that's come from those past experiences. So, you know, we're just going to figure out what that is and help them to move through it from their healthy adult self. We want them to feel reflective, right? They can make sense of those experiences. They can make sense of what's happening right now and how that might be related to past experiences or the way that they are conceiving of the situation. And we want them to feel resourced so they can lean into their healthy self, take the next step, right? The next step might not necessarily be, you know, powerful action. It might be, let me have a little figure out about what's going on here. Yeah. So reassured, reflective, and resourced. These are great kind of stances to take as a client. And all of this is a kind of way into the healthy adult self, right? When the client believes they are creative and resourced and they always have access to their healthy self, Right? That's where we want them to, that feeling of, yeah, I'm resourced. I may not remember that in the moment, but if I just take a pause and go, okay, no, I can make a choice here. That they can access parts of their healthy adult self, the four key resources of self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust. These are the kind of two elements that they know they're creative and resourced, and they can access these parts. Yeah, and what our job is to show them how to get there, how to access that, how to know they're always in choice. So then, you know, and some of the things I will say in my marketing is, you know, I want you to feel like you've got your own back no matter what. Like, there's a lot of talk in the world at the moment about, you know, other people need to take responsibility for how they make me feel, right? You can't make me feel triggered, activated, upset, whatever. Actually, I think it's the other way around. I don't care what anyone says or does. I want to have my own back. To me, that's a much healthier approach to our very kind of divided and increasingly complex world. We don't want our clients to feel like they're walking on eggshells waiting for people to upset them. No, other thing, other direction. We want them to feel like it's okay. If people are going to be people, we don't need to control the world. We just need to know that we're in choice. Much healthier. Okay. So we want to do this because this helps the client expand their self-concept, right? They grow their awareness of their survival strategies, their protective beliefs and behaviors. They positively impact, we help them to positively impact their sensitivity to those perceived risks, right? Oh, here I am saying something a bit controversial on the gram. I can feel myself braced for that. I'm worried about how that's going to be received. Here's how I'm going to take care of myself so I still get to do that thing, that brave, courageous thing. But I know that that's coming, right? I know that that sensitivity is coming. So here's how I'm going to take care of myself. And it means that they get out of that self-doubt loop faster. It means that they start to expand their self-concept, right? The automatic responses to self-doubt coming up is coming from their healthy self. Like, oh, it makes total sense. I'm feeling a bit edgy because I'm sending this message out and I don't know how it's going to be received. And I'm a bit worried about being judged or, you know, criticized. Well, that makes total sense. So here's how I'm going to take care of myself, right? Rather than the pattern of, I'll just wait till I feel ready to post that thing, right? Just as an example. So let's bring this to life a bit, because I want to get us thinking about how do we then get into these compass tools? How do we use these with clients? So I want you to come up with an example that's going on for you right now, right? A challenge that you have at the moment. Could be anything, right? Sometimes, you know, the way in is like, I wish I was able to do something. Or the thing I haven't done yet, but I'm going to start Monday, is, right? I want you to take a few moments. What's your current challenge? What do you wish you were able to do? What are the reasons this is a challenge? And what is your protector belief about it? Just jot down some ideas. Don't make it fancy. And that's just going to give us some raw material to start playing. How you're going? Got some notes down? Okay. So just hold this in your mind. We're going to just go around the compass and look at some key messages that I want you to have around, like, how, where do we go? Where's the part that we're looking at? What choices do you have as you're working with clients? And we do this for ourselves, and then it can be, you know, a bit messy and imperfect. Great. So this is the compass. This is what it kind of looks like. There are these four compass points, right? And in the center is the healthy adult self, and it's looking after the protector. And we have these kind of protective patterns that pop up as sort of shadows of each of the four main aspects. Yeah. So we start with the sovereign, which is at the top. This is about self-belief. And the key themes of the sovereign are about vision and values, inner leadership, and encouraging yourself to reach your goals. Right. So the way I like to think about the sovereign in self-belief is it's the fire in the belly, right? It's your inner sovereignty. And I use, by the way, I use archetypal names because that's kind of my jam. You don't have to do that if it doesn't rock your world at all. In fact, make this your own, because that is, you know, going to serve you and your clients more. But what I found is that kind of elemental archetypal aspect really helps me to remember all of this stuff, right? So self-belief is like, it's the fire in your belly, right? What are you here to do? How do you lead yourself? You know, as a parent, as a business owner, as a, you know, as a person that's doing things in the world, in your relationships, how are you leading yourself? What is the vision you have for this aspect of your life? And what are the values that are getting expressed through that, right? And how are you talking to yourself as you're doing this? Are you encouraging yourself, or are you being a dick to yourself the whole time, right? Really kind of being quite mean or bullying to yourself to reach the goal. So it's the how as much as the what, yeah? The sovereign is all about that self-belief. Right? How do I believe that I have something to do in this lifetime, in this world? So just notice in your challenge that you wrote down, right? Is this the area that you think you need to go into? Just kind of have that for yourself. Like, where are we going with this? If I was going to coach someone with this challenge, where would I go? Yeah. Next is the lover. Right. This is about self-acceptance. And for me, this is connected to water because it's about the sort of flow of life. Right. It's about your needs, your opinions, and your preferences, which will ebb and flow and evolve and change. Right. If you're in a river, you're never quite in the same river in the same place twice. Right. I think that's how that quote goes. Emotions, they're very transitory. Emotions last for, you know, a few minutes, and then we kind of move on to something else. A natural state is in a place of quite peacefulness. So how are you relating to your emotions around stuff? Can you accept all the parts of yourself, right? Without needing them to change. Just like, I've got all of these different parts. I've got the past me and the petty, judgy me, and, you know, the super generous me. I've got all the qualities that I love about myself and the bits that I wish I didn't have. But do they all belong to me? Am I keeping, you know, I use this metaphor of the love bus, right? You've got all the parts on the bus. What are the parts that you have abandoned by the side of the road? Because they're the bits that will come back to haunt you. Yeah. And when you belong to yourself, it means it's so much easier to connect with others, with the world, with nature, with spirit, when you have that kind of true connection to yourself. It's like your connection, when you belong to yourself in that truthful way, your connection with others is going to be rooted in that truth and that sense of, this is who I am, this is authentically me. Yeah, all my bits. So this is a bit, so self-acceptance is about that kind of flow of life, the water aspect of it. And I think that helps because often with emotions, there's a lot of stuff, right? There is the stuff that comes out that needs to be expressed. So, you know, how do you love yourself? How do you love others? Love the world. Next is the warrior, which is associated with self-worth, or it's about self-worth and it's associated with the warrior. And this is earthy. This is really earthy, earthy stuff. Yeah, it's very real. There's nothing kind of theoretical about that warrior energy. It's about advocating for stuff. Like, what do you take a stand for in your life? It's about boundaries. So what do you do to take care of yourself when something isn't okay for you? Yeah. It's about the territory or the space that you take up. It's about action. And so there's a real kind of earthiness to that warrior energy. It's very real. So, you know, I will often talk to clients about, you know, when it comes to self-worth, it's things like advocating for your own sort of assets that are quite tangible and finite, like your money, your time, your energy, your love, right? Those things that are kind of like, you know, only you can kind of manage those. We talk a lot about, yeah, boundaries, which, you know, people get kind of quite mixed up with boundaries and ultimatums, right? Again, requiring other people to change so they can feel okay. Whereas boundaries are very much about what do you do to take care of yourself when something isn't okay? You don't need anyone else to change. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Love that for he. Yeah. So there's something very earthy about warrior energy. Yeah. Very earthy. And, you know, I always imagine it's, you know, you're drawing a line in the sand and in the earth. You know, that's how you know you're in that place. So just notice, is the challenge you talked about, is it to do with self-worth? And the last one, our west point of the compass is the sage, which is about self-trust. And this is kind of air, because it's very much about the thoughts and the thinking and the way we kind of make sense of the world. So sage is sage wisdom, right? It's not the herb. it's sage wisdom. So it's your intellect and your intuition, right? We want those to be in balance, because it's all about discernment, right? How do you discern what you're doing? That's how you know you're trusting yourself. It's about decision making and perspectives, which are often a bit complex, right? Because you're taking into account sometimes consequences and things like that. What people often do is stay in all or nothing, when there's actually always a third option. They will delay making any decisions, right? That's why the bystander is the shadow of self-trust. Bystander's like, I'm just going to wait until everything's perfect, until I know enough, until I can trust that this decision won't piss anyone off, right? And so then they're waiting forever. Whereas sage energy is like, yeah, there's no perfect outcome here. I don't even know what the outcome's going to be, but I'm going to make my best guess. I'm going to make a choice here. And I'm going to trust myself to kind of be with whatever the consequences are. Right? So it's about taking perspectives, about, you know, what's the short, medium, and long-term stuff, all of that. Not requiring things to be super simple. Not outsourcing decision making to other people. What would you do? You know, rather than what do I actually think is the right thing to do here? Yeah. I had a coach once who said to me, like, running a business is basically decision making every single day. And so, you know, you'll find if you work a lot with business owners, this is often the place where people get a bit stuck. They're in that bystander mode because they don't want to annoy anyone with, you know, and that's a beautiful quality to have, but it also means that they aren't making any moves forward. So that connection between the bystander and the critic, right? Self-belief in your mission and your work in the world, and getting stuck in, you know, not being able to trust yourself, that's why that bystander critic combo can show up for business owners and be so disabling. Just offer that because I know a few of you are working with people in that area. So there are the four kind of compass points. I just want to pause the share for a second. And I just wonder if anyone wants to volunteer with their challenge so we can see where we might go with it. Anka. Hi. Tell us about your challenge.
My challenge is that I'm sick and I don't really get healthy enough to do something. But also the sickness puts me out of nursing and really gives me a big jolt to really get out of there. But I don't even have the energy to do it. I don't know if that works for your thing.
It totally does. Yeah. What I'm curious to know, like, I'm just going to go back to the questions, but what does your protector say about this challenge?
That was the third, right? The third point? I wish I was reasons for this. No, my protector. Okay. It's my body saying no,
mm-hmm.
To the overload in nursing or to nursing. And I don't want the doctors to just fix me up with medications.
So I'm curious to know if that's your healthy self or your protector.
Yeah, I think the first is, I don't know, maybe both is a healthy self.
Yeah.
But also I felt a bit like one is on the side. So do you want to ask something else then?
No, keep talking.
Okay. So, because this is like kind of where I have the only place where I have energy is like, no, this is not okay. And when you read the different four things, the first two resonated the most and the last two not at all. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of in the area like the protector stuff, like there's a fire in the belly, but you better don't do anything about it because it could be dangerous. And then there's what was the other one? Yeah, so the accepting, like, damn it, I'm over with this for a long time already. Why am I still in there? Why don't I just now go on? It's kind of like, that's more the protector stuff, I think.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah. So what would you do with a client who was presenting with an illness that is kind of never quite going away? And they've got a clear message from their body. This is a no, something has to change. What's your take on it? How do you make sense of it?
Yeah, I would ask them how this makes sense in their system, if they have even dealt with this kind of way of looking at it.
Yeah. Oh, and like, how do you make sense of it? What do you think is going on here?
Yeah, what I said, like the immediate thing was like, damn it, this is enough now. But also, like, my body is shut down. I can't even do stuff. Like, wow, that really is at the edge of, like, oh my God, like, what if I don't have enough energy to even do something different in the future? You know, the kind of little bit of a nervousness there. Maybe I'm really more sick than I think, but everybody says I'm not. So they just want to put me on whatever meds, but the meds also wouldn't work because it's too up and down, like pulse and heart rate and blood pressure is too up and down that they can't even do that. So the basic wisdom is like, just rest more. It was too much for too long. You just need to rest more. And then things will come out of this. But again, that feels like the healthy self.
It does feel like the healthy self. Yeah. It's too much. It's gone on for too long. I need to rest.
And there's no way it will ever change. And I'm not the only one. I'm just the one who's breaking down right now. The others have been in the past and will in the future.
Yeah. So just notice that, right? That you've got what I'm hearing in terms of like the aspect of your healthy self that's most vocal right now, I'm hearing your warrior.
Oh, okay.
Right? There is a limit here, right?
Yes.
I'm taking a stand. And it may be that you're not quite ready to take the stand yet, right? But it's like that warrior energy is kind of emerging here. right? This is not okay. I need to change I need to make some changes. Probably don't quite know what or how yet, but I know something has to change because the system I'm in is not going to change. So I need to take care of me. I need to advocate for my needs.
Interesting, yeah. So how do you, like the, what's holding me back is what more like in the first two, I think, but what, where the healthy self is at is the worry. I would have never thought about it.
Yeah.
How would you figure that out?
I'm just telling you what I hear, right? Which is you kind of taking a stand and wanting to advocate for yourself. And what I would also say, guys, is like, don't worry about getting this perfect, because we could equally stay with the, you know, with that sovereign energy and the self-belief and talk about what do you want to do, right? And maybe there's some dreaming and scheming you can do from your sick bed, which would feel really lush, and create a vision board in your mind with zero energy required and no output, you know? You could stay with self-acceptance and go, oh, I just want to accept the part of me that is ill, right?
Yes.
Equally, you could go to self-trust and go, okay, I need to make some decisions, right? It's very forgiving, okay? Like, yeah.
So what I really like is that, like, what immediately came up for me, and it's part of me being kind of stuck in this situation now, maybe also why the body is still needing more rest, is in it is already the healthy self, but also the protector active. And so to figure out in which way is which energy, like when you said this, I felt like, yes, this is a go energy, like, yeah, full yes. And also the full no was clear in there. And the first two, which I came up with, were more like, yes, there is a fire in the belly, but it can't, you know, it better stays there. It's more protector energy, right? Than healthy self energy if it's pressed away.
It might be, or it just might be that it's emerging.
Yes, yeah, right. But there is something that is working against. That's when you know that that's the protector stuff, right? Okay, good. Yeah, thank
that's
you.
That's right. Yeah, the resistance. If you're hearing resistance,
yes,
that's usually a protector. Like, yes, this is the reason why I can't have what I want, or I can't take the next step, or I can't and shouldn't. They're good words to listen out for.
Wonderful.
Any kind of resistance, then that's probably a protector.
Yeah.
But what I heard from you is pretty clear. This is enough now. My body has had enough. I don't actually need medical advice and all of that jazz, because that brings with it a whole ton of other symptoms to be on medication. I kind of know what the problem is, and I know what the challenge is.
Yeah.
And I need to rest, and I need to figure a way through.
Thank you. That feels so good. Like, yeah. It's permission giving what we are doing, right? When we are working with the healthy self and the protective.
And I would also say, one of the assumptions I've come to make is your client does know.
Yes.
Your client, that's the healthy, for me, that's the healthy self. I always assume the client knows, even when they're like going, I don't know, right? It's like, yeah, okay, that's okay. It's okay to not know, but I wonder, what are the options here, you know? And so, you know, whenever the client's referring to their body's wisdom, that I pay a huge amount of attention to that, because I think that is our wisest part. That is our unconscious. It kind of bypasses a lot of resistance, but it may be inconvenient truths, you know, i.e. I think your job is trying to kill you. That's quite inconvenient to know that truth. That requires quite a lot of change. And when you have low energy as well, and you're not feeling very well, it's like, you know, permission giving to dream and not be in a rush. You know, because it's amazing how much energy can get created knowing that there is a way out of a situation where the client has always felt trapped. Even when they're still in the situation, if there's a way out that feels feasible and doable, then that creates some energy, some fire in your belly. Right?
I just like to say this because when you said dreaming and vision boarding, which doesn't require any cutting out papers and looking for glue and dealing with all the mess in the paper after, well, I've done it so many times, that was like, yes, that was again a full body yes, because it's a small step, and you delivered the small step to me. I wouldn't have had the energy or creativity right now to come up with it, but to deliver a little doable thing where then the person can say yes or no, that's really helpful. Like it really, like, now my mind is running. Oh yeah, I want to dream. And I, that full permission to not have to act on it, which also is like really helpful.
I love that that's helpful, because I think, I know so many of the clients I've worked with over the years have been in this place of semi-burnout, right? And so, and I think this is why we always have to have that quite systemic view, is that often our clients will tell themselves that they're failing in systems that have no interest in them thriving. So thriving, for me, when I think of you, Anka, means you take your beautiful, extensive experience and skills, and you feel like there's a reciprocation of what you're offering and what you're receiving. And when that's in balance, and it doesn't actually matter where the context is. I mean, it might be another nursing job. It might be something completely different. I'm very unattached, lovingly unattached to that. But I am sort of seeing, oh, there is a out of balance here that's way out of whack, to the point where your body is saying, this is a no.
And if I may say one more thing, because when you pointed out the warrior, which was totally not in my picture at all, it feels like now I can, if I need to, or as I'm ready to, I can rely that that energy is already in me, because I've felt it in this process working with you. I already felt it. So that is now more kind of like, maybe I can get somewhere else, you know, like really, really good with the model here.
Thank you. I'm glad that helps. Yeah. Yeah, and this is what I mean, right, by the safest, most doable next step can literally be, Anka, you drawing a line in your palm and going, no, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, that can be accessing your warrior, right? That's the line I'm drawing in the sand. I don't have to tell anyone. I can do it from my sick bed, right? Like, literally, it's the most doable thing, and it opens something up when you can see, oh, there's a part of me that's just giving me a ton of really good information here, and I don't have to do anything about it just yet, right? I think this is why it's so important for us to be really unattached to our clients' goals. We both believe in them, you know, and kind of to the death, and couldn't give a toss if it never happens, right? You have to be able to hold that complexity. And it's tricky, right? It's tricky because we do want our clients to have the things they want and all of that jazz. But also, yeah, it's a lot, right? Anka, does that feel like you've got a little bit of daydreaming to do from your bed? Don't produce a damn thing. We're excited to see where you take it. Yeah, fab. Yeah, Hannah, tell me more about this question. This is a great question.
Yeah, I'm just interested because, yeah, like you said, sometimes there might be this gap between what people want to desire to change and actually what their capacity is, and how to like coach when there's that maybe that mismatch. I'd love to hear your experiences that you've had and like examples or interesting when it comes up.
I think this is a big one for folks who are working often for themselves and they're not a very good boss to themselves, but also for folks who are working in environments where the workplace, you know, doesn't really care about them thriving, right? It's not a priority. So this mismatch, right, between recognizing you're kind of in that semi-burnout and also having a desire to make a change, but the capacity or the energy required to do that isn't there. So a couple of things I would suggest. That is really common, and often people who are in this position are kind of get shit doneers, right? They tend to be quite over-functioning people anyway. So they may have a pretty ambitious belief in their own capacity, right? So it's like, my normal capacity is to work at 120%, right? And I'm always keen to point out that that is a mathematical impossibility. That's why you're burnt out. You can't work at more than 100%. And why would you want to? Right? Where is the percent for you? Because you only have a certain amount of energy, a certain amount of hours in the day. So a lot of this is about looking at where do the beliefs come from that somehow they should be doing more than they are, right? Because that can reveal, oh, well, actually, you know, this has been the kind of law of our family. Everyone works at 120% because that's how we get dad's approval, for example. Or in my relationship, there is a ton of responsibility on me to bring in more money. So I feel that sense of, you know, obligation and, you know, there's a lot on me at the moment, right? So we need to look at where is the belief coming from that somehow they should be doing more than they are, right? Just in terms of assessing that capacity and also like offering themselves a ton of compassion about what they are doing, right? Like we have this belief in our culture that we have to work harder to get more. And, you know, I don't want to get into like the law of attraction kind of rabbit hole, but there is something here about saying, well, what if we worked less hard, right? What if we actually did things with more intention that were more aligned with our values? Then we would have probably have more energy, but also more satisfaction, more fulfillment, right? So I would say that part of this for this particular challenge, when the capacity is reduced, it means the expectations need to be reduced as well. And part of that is about, looking at the beliefs around why you should be doing more, offering more. And I guess after that, it comes back to, okay, what do you actually want? You know, what do you actually want? What does a good life look to you? So that comes back to that, the sort of sovereign tools of vision and values, what matters to you. I can't tell you how many people I've worked with in that kind of state who've never sat back and gone, what do I want? It's almost like it's too scary a question to ask, because what if I find out that I don't want the life I actually have, then where the hell am I, you know? And it's like, oh, you're one step closer to the life you do want, is the kind of life coachy thing to say. But I genuinely believe that. Like, wouldn't you rather find out now and do that? You know, you're in the perfect relationship with a coach to help make sense of that, right? Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I absolutely, totally believe that too, Vicky. I want X, but that will involve hard work and I don't have the capacity for that. And it's like, yeah, but it's so much easier to work. You already know you can work hard, right? So it's so much easier to work hard for something you actually want rather than for something that other people want you to have or want you to do. And, you know, as well, I think, I remember when I realized that I had, you know, put my sort of ladder against the wrong building, if you like, and was busy climbing it and going, oh, hang on, I don't even want to get in that building anymore. That it was devastating to realize I'd built, you know, spent 15 years building a career that was totally killing me. And when I discovered what I did want to do, the energy that I had was insane. I remember on a Sunday morning working on a spreadsheet to figure out the costs for a retreat that I was going to run with some friends. And my husband was just like, what are you doing working on a spreadsheet on a Sunday morning? And I was like, I've had this idea and I want to write it down. We've all had those moments, right? Where it's like the energy builds because you're so satisfied by what you're doing. So all to say, I think we tend to underestimate what we can do when we are coming from a place of depletion, because we are assuming it's going to be more of the same.
Do you think that is more likely that they're saying something that they don't actually want? Like, I wonder whether sometimes my clients will be like, well, I'd like to, you know, only work a 3-day week, or I'd like, you know, I'd like it to look like this and earn X amount of money. But the only evidence I've ever had is that that means I have to be flat out, cut out time with my family, lose all the things that I ever want. So it's never going to happen. So what's the point? Like they, yeah. It's like they can't imagine, and I include myself in it, I suppose, that there's some subconscious level as well, that it, in order to have the success that you want, money that you want, freedom, flexibility, you have to work yourself to death. And a lot of people I work with have tried to come out of that and then can't really honestly believe that there's another way, that they can work less and feel more fulfilled and still have what they want.
Yeah. And this comes down to what your beliefs, right? So that's a belief buster challenge, because whatever you believe, you're right. So if you believe the only way I can make a living is to work incredibly hard and have no time for my family, then that will absolutely be your reality. But if you are like, I wonder if I can do this differently, it's a great belief to play with, right? So, and then you have to practice the belief. You have to figure out, like, what would that look like? Often I have found that when that is the case, it's usually a mix of a business problem, i.e. a pricing issue, right? Or it's a protective belief. I can't charge more, do more, blah, blah. I can't separate myself from my clients in that way.
Yeah.
And a lot of this will often come back to the challenge around conflict. If I make any changes, I'm going to be judged and criticized and voted off the island, and then I'll be under a bridge living like a bag lady. So I may as well not try. Right. And all of that is just really shitty fortune telling, because you don't actually know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's quite big. If I'm working with things like nutritionists or health coaches and stuff, well, everybody else is only charging 50 quid and they just do this. So I just have to keep repeating that model. And I keep going, yeah, but like you say, like, look at the maths. That is literally never going to work. You will never match your corporate salary unless you're working every single hour God sends and you have hundreds of clients and you'll feel awful. So let's just try a different way of doing things practically and mentally.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's part of exactly what you're also raising, Jane. I want X, but what if I'm wrong? What if I I believe that, you know, my, for example, just to combine your two challenges here, what if I have a health coaching business and my model is getting really amazing results for my clients, and I believe that I have something of real value here, but I want more money, but what if I'm wrong? What if no one will pay that for that, right? Then that's a mix, right, of a business problem and a protective belief. Because the business problem is your pricing model probably needs to change, and then all of the beliefs that come along with that need to get coached around. And then, you know, we build self-trust gently, right? So what's the safest, most doable way to do this, right? Maybe it's you get in touch with a few past clients and say, I'm trialing this thing, you know, I would love to work with you again, and it's at this price. What do you think? And you start to kind of experiment with it, with the new pricing structure and the new beliefs that go along with it, right? So all of it is none. So in the same way that self-doubt doesn't get created in a vacuum, right? Self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust also don't get created. You don't magically wake up and go, sweet, I have a ton of self-worth today, I am good now, that's it, right? It comes from experimenting and playing with our beliefs and taking different actions and, you know, making changes. Right, has to, right? But that's one of the things I talk about in the module workbook, is that, you know, I like to think of this as we're planting seeds and then we're watching them grow with our clients, right? So some people will come with quite a lot of self-belief but no self-trust. So they've got a pretty nice green shoot when it comes to self-belief, but self-trust still in the soil, right? It's like, oh, so that needs to be cared for and watered, and, you know, all of that needs to happen before it will start to go. Jane, talk to me about your question. I'm hearing entanglement. I'm just putting a warning shot out there.
No, I was just thinking about seeing the logic of the small steps, the experiments, to trying everything out. But then if you don't trust the goal in the first place, then the effort and the route is like, well, supposing I put all that effort in and do all that work, and then I get there and discover it's not where I want to be. So there's something about how to cultivate self-trust in the vision at the very start in order to make those steps meaningful or worthwhile.
Yeah, totally. So a couple of things come up for me. One is, and we will talk about this in module 10 when we talk about goals, I'm a huge believer in no more than 30-day goals, right? So if you've got a big project like Anka, change career, or, you know, radically alter direction of job, that might be, in the end, 7 30-day goals. And that's because of this reason, right? Like, often we will set out the goal, and it takes a year or 2 years to bring to fruition. We've changed so much in the meantime that it doesn't really fit who we are anyway. And I don't even remember why this mattered, but I've worked towards this goal. So the thing to do is stay in relationship with the thing you want, because it will probably change. As you grow more self-trust or self-belief or self-acceptance and self-worth, you're going to change and you're going to find new layers of self-doubt to work with. So stay in relationship with yourself and the thing you want so that you can kind of do the pivoting if you need to. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, there ain't no guarantees that you're going to love the life you think you want. And that's why I think, you know, really playing with that vision and values is super helpful.
The 30-day goals, yeah, that makes perfect sense, because if you're looking at a 3-year goal, the idea of somebody investing here in a 3-year journey with no guarantees, you know, people just chop and change and drop off. But if you break it down to, well, 30 days and we'll see where you are, then that's so much, it's manageable.
Just see how you feel.
Yeah.
And in those 30 days, you're going to take at least 30 steps forward, probably 25 steps forward. So
yeah. And you might have a sense of where you're heading, but it's not a firm point. Yeah. So that every 30 days you're, okay. That's really helpful.
I'm glad. Yeah. Anyone else want to share their challenge? Would be good to have one more example. Come on. Someone be brave. Vicky, do you want to share yours?
my internet's being a bit unstable. Hopefully it'll be okay. What did I write down?
If she drops off, we'll know she really didn't want to share.
My current challenge is, I run a community group. I've just welcomed in some new members into my course. I'm running like a little, you know, daily challenge, and I still, and this has lasted for a long time, struggle to bring myself to go in there sometimes to see what is going on. I said I wish I was able to do this once a day really thoroughly and then just move on with my day and be like, great, everyone is happy in there, or I've sorted everything out, I can move on with everything else, rather than it like sitting like this thing that like builds up in my head. The reason this is a challenge is I'm afraid when I go in, I will see someone is unhappy, or they are failing, or that there is no engagement or no conversation and the whole thing is dead and everyone's disappointed with it, which ultimately, when I think about the challenge, my protector believes you are disappointing people. This entire community is a total disappointment and a failure, and I don't want to go and witness that.
Notice the truism there, right? This is a disappointment and I don't want to witness that.
Yeah.
makes total sense why you're not going in. Who wants to start their day getting evidence that they're disappointing everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then I'll just put it off for the whole day, and then just, for, you know, it'll just get bigger and bigger in my head, and it'll just be so awful. And then I'm doing it there at 10 o'clock at night, being like, oh, I've got to go into this space. And they'll be like, oh, they're having a really nice time in there. Oh, that's great. I should have just done this at 10 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, love it. What, so where do you think this fits with the compass?
What I found interesting was when I see warrior, I'm normally like, I'm really good at that. Like, I'm really good. Like, I'm busy taking, you know, normally I would just take action and get on with things. And so actually I found quite triggering the kind of, it's a slight victim-y things, isn't it? That kind of, yeah, I'm letting people down or disappointing people, or something will happen at me, to me. I don't know, that's the one that kind of,
yeah, I really hear that kind of, it's the scapegoat, right? It's the shadow.
Yeah.
Of the,
and I was like, I feel like, so I'm hard. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not scapegoating anyone. And I was like, but oh shit, that really probably is the one.
Yeah.
That stings, and that probably I need to sit with the most.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great example. So I'm curious to know, like, what does your healthy self say about all of this? Like, what would your healthy adult self offer to you?
I mean, if I was coaching someone around this, and the logical, healthy self says, I'm doing the best I can, you know, I believe in what I have put together, how other people choose to respond it is on them, is not on me. And if anyone has a problem or has a challenge, I am able to coach them through it, ask questions, you know, offer advice. That there's never been a situation that I'm like, oh, the end of my business, I don't know what to do with this, so I'm going to give up. So healthy self says, whatever you see in there, you can handle.
Nice. How does it feel to just hear yourself say that?
Good. Yeah. It's still the knowing and the knowing. Like, I know that, but yeah. I don't know that.
Yeah. What could you do to like support yourself, just to sort of embody that a bit more?
Well, like the worry part says, just fucking get on with it and go in the group and go and see what everyone's doing. I think this is where I struggle with that kind of like experimenting and doing something smaller, or that would help build, because I was like, I don't know other than take massive leap. Do you know what I mean? Like, the pricing thing. I was talking to Cassie and Hannah about this. Like, I just want people to just put their price out and see what happens. But some people, that's like, whoa, just way too much. So I'm not sure. Like, I suppose the answer is I don't know what teeny tiny thing I could do other than just my usual routine is just man up and get on with it.
Yeah. Well, and I notice, right, there's not a lot of compassion there for the part that's a bit afraid, actually, that doesn't want to disappoint people. And that might sometimes, because you're also a human and other people are human and they have expectations and all of that. So you might disappoint people from time to time.
Yeah.
Have you done that in the past? Have you disappointed someone, maybe in your business or outside of it?
I think, yeah, absolutely. And I certainly know historically it was we constantly feeling like a disappointment to my mother. We weren't the children she really wanted us to be. And, you know, who we were and what we were interested in was not what she envisaged for us or wanted in her children. So I think it's that wound that keeps ringing through.
Yeah, that's a tough one too, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I don't care how old we get. I think we do want our parents to be proud of us. That's a very natural thing to want. And when we feel like we're disappointing them, it's like, yeah, it is a wound. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm curious to know, like, what do you need to hear when you feel that sense of disappointment, that you're disappointing your mother? Like, what do you need to hear from yourself?
I think it's that going back into those moments, or going back into that child, and the things that I've written down before, that reassurance of you know, you're a worthy human being, you know, it's okay to like what you like and to behave in the way that you behave. It's obviously not unless I'm hurting someone or affecting someone else negatively, but and that actually in a business context is the superpower, is the bit that helps and connects with people rather than trying to be something you're not.
Oh, that gives me goosebumps. Yeah, the part of you that really loves this work is your superpower, and part of this work is connecting with these folks, knowing that in the past you've always been able to resolve anything. Most things you can, right? Even if you have a total clanger, right, you can, you know, repair. I notice your voice gets quite soft when you talk like that to yourself. There's a real genuine sense of compassion that you have for yourself there.
Yeah.
It's really lovely to hear.
Day to day's not there, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, you know, I wonder if, you know, part of that sort of moving out of that shadowy part, that scapegoaty part, into that warrior, that and the self-trust as well, part of that is, I think, just practicing this in a way that feels okay for you. So one of the things I heard you say was, I would just, if I was operating from my healthy self, I'd go in there at 10 a.m. and I'd spend an hour and then I'd get on with my day. So maybe that's what you could do. Maybe the first step is just booking that hour out. And then if you feel resistance before you do it, because that would make total sense, right? If you're doing this new brave thing. It's like just going back into that more compassionate part of you that says, you know, what do I need to hear right now to make this okay, make this doable?
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking care of you so that you can take care of your people.
Yeah.
How does that land for you, Becky? How does that feel?
Yeah. No, I like that as a question to myself to check in rather than it just being, it could go on a to-do list, but I'll do that when I feel like it, and knowing full well there's never going to be a moment that I am currently desperately running in to go and do it. So what do I need to say to myself and to give myself right now to go in there with a slightly better headspace? Yeah.
And one that's just, you know, I mean, the thing is, right, when you're good at getting things done, we can do that thing of man up and get on with it, right? And often we're doing that and we're a bit dysregulated and a bit jangly and we're sort of braced, right? Because it's like, right, I've got to white knuckle my way through it. Whereas your whole energy just kind of softened into, okay, what do I need to hear right now? I need to hear that it's okay, that I've got the superpower of connection, that I really care about this work, care about my people. And even if I do disappoint anyone, I trust myself to be able to figure that out. Yeah. Beautiful. They won't know what's hit them.
I know. It'll be there all the time. It won't go to get rid of me.
Well, and I do also want to thank you, Vicky, because it brings to life a thing that I think is super helpful just to know. Is when you start to kind of articulate, like, oh, okay, this is probably about, you know, like with Vicky, she was talking about the scapegoat, right? So when we're talking about these protectors that we're hearing, usually the best place to start is one further move around the compass, right? So going into that discernment and decision making around, what do I need to hear? Where does that come from? Making sense of it and then making a decision about what you want to do differently. Yeah. Taking that perspective of, you know, what is this related to? Yeah. Trusting yourself that whatever happens, you'll be all right. So just a thing to notice, right? If you're a bit like, where do I start? Just listen out for the protector that you're hearing from your client and then move one round into the, so the scapegoat goes to self-trust, the bystander to self-belief, right? If you're stuck on the sidelines waiting to feel ready, zip over to why are you doing this in the first place? What's the mission? What's the big vision here, that the value that gets expressed? if it's the critic, how can you pay attention to your needs and your emotions? You know, it's all about being perfect and overworking. So what do you need right now? And if it's the martyr, right, overgiving, go back to warrior. What do you need to advocate for yourself? What are the boundaries here? What's not okay right now? You know, and how can you take care of yourself? And I found that can just be a really helpful little crib sheet for where I'm going with a client. Yeah. And, you know, it, like I said before, don't worry too much about getting it perfect, because like we talked about with Anka, we could have gone anywhere and it would have been okay. We would have figured something out, right? But it's about kind of, you know, again, it's that reassurance to the client that it makes sense, that their experience makes sense. You know, they can feel resourced, they can make choices, and they can access their healthy adult self at any moment and in any situation, and we're kind of here for it. We're just going to reflect that back. Yeah. Any questions, comments? Confusions, excitements, anything anyone wants to share just before we close up today? All good. So all I would say is, you know, if you can spend a little bit of time just familiarizing yourself with the different archetypes, the different sort of resources, then that will help just to sort of get it clear in your mind. I would highly recommend, you know, just even looking at what's the part of that compass that is a little bit underdeveloped for me. Like, is it, you know, is it my self-worth or my self-acceptance? And then maybe just trying one of the tools in there. You may want to take it to your practice pods. These are all kind of self-reflective tools. So you can do them with the client, but you could also give them to a client as homework, and you can do them for yourself, and it's all good. I tend to have a sort of balance, so sometimes I'll go through a process with a client and show them what I'm teaching them, and then give them the stuff so they can go off and kind of play with it for themselves. And if a client is a bit more like, oh yeah, that would be really helpful to do, then I'll just give it to them as some homework to take away before the next session, and then we end up spending the session talking about what they actually kind of came up with, what they learned. So either way, it can work. You know, it's just a discernment thing for you and your clients. But I would just offer, you know, anything you can do just to practice this for yourself, even thinking about which of these tools might be really helpful for my clients, like where do they kind of have the least developed part of the compass, that will help just to, you know, familiarize yourself with the tools. I had a WhatsApp message from a coach I worked with in the very first class of SBCA this week, actually, who said that she'd just for the first time gone through the heart map with a client. And she's like, bloody hell, I totally missed this. Like, and she's waited 3 years to crack on with it. She said it was really cool and really helpful, but she's like, I never used it before. So all to say, like, you know, don't put yourself under any pressure to like memorize everything or all of that jazz. Sometimes, you know, it's just a client will rock up and you'll be like, oh, I think I know how to support that person, and let me play with this, and there you go, you're all good. Yeah, so fun. Oh, that's great, Vicky, I'm so glad. Yeah, you're a quick start, so that makes sense. Yeah, brilliant.
She was literally in my inbox this morning saying, what would you do in this situation? And now I've seen that, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll try one of these tools with her. I'm like, yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I'm so glad. Cool. All right, lovely humans, take care of yourself. We'll dive into this a little more next week. Do have a think about your clients and how you might want to work with them on this stuff, and we'll go into it next week. Yeah. Really good to see you all. All right, take care, everyone. Stay warm. Bye.